Welcome to the Casual Temple Podcast, episode 26, and I'm your host, Marilee Duffy. At the Casual Temple, our mission is to discover our connection to the unseen world of spirit and how that empowers us to know our true selves. But before we begin, a little favor, please follow or subscribe and hit that heart-shaped like button on your favorite podcast platform. This week, we are honored to have Luwia Bomani on the show today. Luwia is an 8th-generation witch, deeply immersed in the practice of hoodoo, and the author of the remarkable book Conjuring the Calabash, Empowering Women with Hoodoo Spells and Magic. In her book Conjuring the Calabash, Luwia helps to demystify the practice of hoodoo while offering accessible spells and the importance of approaching spirits with humility and respect. Luwia dispels misconceptions about hoodoo and champions the appreciation of diverse magical traditions and cultural perspectives. Stay tuned so you can bask in Luwia's wisdom and charm here on The Casual Temple. Welcome to The Casual Temple. This week, we welcome our guest, Luwia Kai El-Jamaa Bomani, who has many talents as a writer, playwright, spirit woman, educator, and an 8th-generation witch. In the realm of spirituality, Luwia is an Igun medium and a priestess of the Oya in the Yoruba system. Luwia hosts the podcast Fish Heads and Red Gravy, dedicated to celebrating marginalized people of the esoteric and occult world. We are here to talk about her latest book, Conjuring the Calabash, Empowering Women with Hoodoo Spells and Magic. Luwia, I'm so honored and happy to have you on the Casual Temple.
I'm so excited to be here. It's so wonderful.
Yeah. Oh, gosh. Yeah. Just like right before we got on, I was telling you, I finished your book, Conjuring the Calabash. Oh my gosh. I'm going to totally geek out on you later. So basically I just want to preface, right. You know, we're going to talk a little bit about your, sort of your path there. But I just want to set folks up because it is like the most unique. I read a lot of like occult and magical books, just so you know.
Right.
It is so just a wonderful perspective that I personally, you know, I'm very ignorant of, I kind of heard about hoodoo. I have some friends that sort of practice it. But man, it's like a history lesson. It's the recipes and spells. It's the wonderful stories about you and your family. That's so beautiful. And like, ugh. Anyway, that's just setting it up. how great I think it is. Yeah. So let's just kind of get, you know, where you feel led to kind of start and give us some sort of idea of like your background, and we'll kind of kick it off there.
Yeah. Well, you know, at a very young age, probably around 5 or 6, I started seeing spirit. And, you know, for a lot of people that would be really daunting and scary. I did go to talk to my mother about it because naturally, you know, when you see things, you talk to your parents. And, she really broke it down that she, when she was younger, she could see spirit, and that, you know, if you are too afraid, you know, they won't ever come back. They're there to, because they need your help. And also because, you know, this is part of your life's work, you know, to see spirit and to be able to interpret messages from spirit. And so she walked me through how to deal with spirit. You know, we talked about how to, you know, have your time to be a kid, you know, to do your things you want to do, and sort of to build this barrier up so that you wouldn't have to always hear the chatter from the spirit land. She was into tarot. She was into astrology, heavy into astrology. She still is. You know, that just sort of laid a framework for me. When I would go to school, I went to Catholic school in New Orleans. There are lots of Catholic schools. The Catholic school system sort of took over in a way, they're public schools there, but there was this large grouping of influx of moving Black and Latino kids into the Catholic school system. And earlier we were talking about this. I was talking about this with my mom, and she was talking about how a lot of the funding, the Catholic school system was losing a lot of the funding in the city. And so whereas they had a lot of affluent white families, you know, in the Catholic school system, they were losing a lot of families. And so as African-American people started becoming more middle class, you know, they could have this option to have their kids attend the Catholic school system, as well as, you know, the Catholic schools, they started to think about how we get more kids. And so there was a lot more sort of waivers and things like that, lottery system and stuff like that to get kids in. So you have kids from various backgrounds attending the schools. And very early was my first introduction to things like Ouija boards or spirit boards and things like that, tarot, in the school, right? It was being in the Catholic school. I remember this girl, she would always bring all these things and we thought they were just fascinating, you know. And we could meet up in the bathroom and somebody would, you know, lean on the door, make sure the nuns wouldn't come around. And we would try to, you know, talk to anybody we could. She'd pull out all kinds of things out of her pockets, right? And I was
Wow.
talking to another interviewer and he was like, "But well, what kind of bag did she have?"
I know, right?
Bring everything there, you know. And so that was, you know, first real introduction into what I think of as being more occult, you know, and I was really fascinated by it all. You know, we did talk about protection, you know, because you always see movies and everybody's like, "Oh, let's do it," and then they leave, you know, leave everything open. But we did. She was well informed, you know, and eventually the nuns got the whiff of it, and they were like, "She needs to go."
Oh.
So yeah, so she didn't graduate from the Catholic school, but anyway, you know, that was sort of you know, that really want led me down the path of figuring out, you know, where does it all go? You know, how do we incorporate it in a way in which it's spiritual, right? And we're not scared of it, and then still be able to tap into, because you know, the two don't always go together when we talk about religion and spirituality.
That's
It's
true.
always like, okay, you're dead, you're done, you know, kind of thing. You know, and don't talk to those people, or now you're into something else that doesn't deal with this. You know, and for me, I always believed that they had to go together. You know, it had to be a merger of both. And so, you know, I was initiated. My grandfather practiced Santeria. I was initiated into that very young, I mean, a while back. And then, you know, Vodun was in my family. We're a lot of Vodun practitioners. And so that was just heavy. You know, it was just things that you just knew to do, you know, and it wasn't somebody would sit down and talk about, you know, this is voodoo or this is hoodoo. It was just recipes, and there were things that you did and things that you knew you didn't do when you went to someone's home, or if you invited someone to your home, you know, you didn't leave your brush out or your comb out because they could take some of that hair and use it against you, you know, things like that that you knew, you know, and it wasn't just if you were having a home party, it could be a workman coming to the home, you know, anybody passing through your home who may see things that you have and think that you have a little bit more than somebody else and just want to, you know, do something to you. So it was all of these kind of sort of spells that I thought were spell work, but nobody ever really said, you know, it was spell work. But people were still going to church and they were still doing other things, but you knew that it was African retention. You knew why you were doing it, you know, in that way, and you knew to respect everybody else who was a practitioner, you know, in a sense. They even if they didn't fully come out and say, "I practice this," you knew that there were overlappings, and there wasn't a lot of, you know, I growing up in New Orleans, there wasn't a lot of you know, just shunning people for that, you know, for what you did. You know, you always knew that there was somebody in your family who knew that. Yeah, my grandmother does that or whatever, you know, and people didn't look at you kind of weird. When we moved to the northern part of Louisiana now, it's a lot different here in this area, you know. There's a lot of understanding of it, but you know, there's still that you know, I don't do that. You know, I'm so far removed from that. It's kind of like it's almost as if it's a, you know, some country thing, you know, some little country thing you do. We don't do that. You know, we're more civilized. We don't do that here, kind of thing. And so yeah, that's, you know, growing up, my mother was always supportive of that, you know, of the, and she you know, encouraged me to constantly, you know, delve deeper into it. Even if she, you know, just stayed with the astrology portion of it all. Just go deeper into that and study within that system and figure out, you know, where it's going to lead you.
So would you say your mother was maybe your main support and guidance on your path, or were there other folks? You said your grandfather as well, but
I would say initially, yes, my mother was one of my main supporters along the path. Because like, as you know, you read the book, in the book when we, you know, that we dealt with some spirit energy in the home. You know, it was my mother who was really the focal point in terms of how to banish that energy. You know, I don't want to give away too much because I want people to read the
Oh,
book.
it's so good.
But you know, just, you know, seeing her, you know, in the motion of doing that, you know, it really made me look at her like, you know, she's a hero, you know, kind of thing, you know, because it's like really, and it gave me a sense that I could do that. You know, I could help other people do that, because as much as I knew I was afraid, I knew she was fearful, but she wouldn't allow the fear to overpower what she knew she had to do, you know, in terms of, you know, relinquishing that energy from the home. So yeah, I would say that my mother, And then my grandfather, my grandmother, but like, like I would always say, people would do different things, but they wouldn't really label it. One grandfather, he would, because he was a Santero, so he would say, I'm going to do this and that, and he would walk around in his white. And but others, weren't so open with it, but they would tell you that these are things that you need to remember, and like you always have, like my sister and brother, they never really, they would listen to some things, but they wanted to do more teenage things, kind of thing like that. And so, but I would always listen because I always felt really drawn to the information, as if, that I knew even at a young age that I would need it later, and so a lot of that information, in helping other people, it did wind up in the book, just ways of using that information that I remembered.
Oh man. Yeah, a couple things. So definitely interesting about sort of maybe what I was hearing, kind of like maybe in New Orleans it's more acceptable and people kind of it's open, and then you moved elsewhere and then it was like, we don't really talk about that in the
Right,
open
right.
necessarily. And that's a kind of, I've heard a lot of different cultures, even here in America, as far as like, I've heard a lot of stories about Appalachian. It's kind of the same thing. There's a lot of stuff
Oh
going on
yeah.
there
Oh yeah. Oh
and
yeah.
super open. And then, yeah, I think it's so cool that you had, such really cool guidance and that you like were listening to your mom, right, as a teenager. So that's really cool. Now this might be a hard question because it's like, what are some of your favorite books that were kind of helpful for you along the way, of your path?
Oh God. Well, I've always like, well, I'm gonna go way back. When my mom was working at a hotel, she was doing housekeeping at a hotel, and I would go. I was probably in seventh or eighth grade, and I would go with her sometimes at night for night turn down. Would turn down the bed and put a little candy on the pillowcase. And so there was this one time we went, and I want to say James Haskins, his voodoo book. That one was there. And so I remember thinking, because sometimes when you especially in New Orleans, when because this hotel was in the French Quarter, right? So a lot of the hotels, they'll have like little knickknack things there for guests. And a lot of it is really fluff. It's not really anything real, but they'll have it for them because they expect, this voodoo city. So they expect, to have all these spooky things. And so a lot of things that you run across, you just laugh, you sort of flip through it and, but this particular book, I was drawn to it. And then I remember later on, the guy, one of the front desk workers, he was like, "Well, we're going to put a stack of new books in the rooms. So you can have that one if you want it, because I really wanted it, right?" And so that one I kept. And so when I did some research, he was really researching a lot of the culture of voodoo and the city. And he wrote a lot of other books as well, And so that one was really interesting because it was written by a black man. And just in terms of his perspective on the city and how much of the city is infused into the magic. And so I think for me, it seemed like more of a historical approach and not just the fluff. You could do this kind of like a movie type, vibe. It was more historical, and so I like that one. Definitely Louisa Teese Jambalaya. I really love that one, and so she's from New Orleans too, right? So, and I remember just reading that one. I remember in between there were lots of other books that I liked, but I just never felt like they were catered towards me. I always felt like they were, just more for, they didn't really take into account my experiences as an African American woman. And so when I read Jambalaya, I felt like that was a book that really brought it home for me, in terms of the city, how we do things, how we mesh, a little bit of voodoo, a little bit of this and that into it, and you do have a jambalaya of practice. And so that one was probably one of my favorites. There are lots of kitty books that I like. I always talk to my kids and tell them about Virginia Hamilton. All of her books got, or they're just so, spiritual and everything like that. But there's this one, and I plan to talk about it at a conference that I'm going to do, which is, and I read later that the guy, he wrote it for adults and children. And it's not really a magical, it is magical. It is a magical book to me. I'm going to own that. It is magical. The Big Orange Splot. Have you ever heard of that one? No. Well, the Big Orange Splot. So this guy, the whole neighborhood, everything is the same, all the houses and everything. And so he decides one day, well, there's a seagull that flies over and drops some paint on the guy's house. And so he leaves the splot. So the neighbors are like, "You gotta paint that, you gotta do something with that." Guy's like, he's trying to figure out what he's going to do, but he decides to paint this scene on his house, leave this lot and just paint around it, this beautiful scene. And the neighbors, of course, they're like, oh, you've gone nuts. So they all decide somebody's got to talk to him. So
Right.
one at a time, they go to talk to him to try to discourage him and, paint his house back just like everybody else's. As the whole
No.
thing is like, we had a neat block before this happened. And so one by one, when people would go over, he would have this conversation with them. You never saw the conversation happen, but the people would leave and they would basically go do the same thing, paint their house in whatever dream that they wanted. And when I used to read that to my kids, because I think the guy, I think it was published in 71 or something like that. But I remember when my kids were little and I read it to them and they were like, that's cool. What's wrong with that? And it's kind of, to me, that is a magical book because I think that, having your own desires and your own goals and working towards those things are, what makes us individuals and what makes us beautiful in our own right, right? And allows other people to see our beauty and to accept us for who we are. Just we don't have to all be the same. And so I use that a lot when I talk about spirituality because we can all embrace the practices, of everybody else. And we don't have, it doesn't mean that yours is better than mine, or I need to just tell you to do mine. It doesn't mean any of that. It just means that we can appreciate, and we can celebrate, each other. And so that's probably one of my favorite magical books because of that.
Oh my gosh, yeah, I'm gonna read it. Now I'm gonna go check it out. Because it reminds me of one of my favorite books is Don Quixote, right? It's kind of a similar thing, right? He's like, everybody thinks he's nuts, right? Just going out doing his own thing. So yeah, that's definitely speaking to me. So I love that. So my next question is, I wrote it like, what does your spiritual or magical path look like today? And I guess that please, help us understand that. But like, what does that look like day to day, I guess, is maybe my main question for you.
I guess, when you're first initiated and you do all these things, you use those labels, whatever goes with that system, and so for a long time, I remember writing when I would write on the internet, Facebook or whatever, and I would say, I'm a witch, and then people would get into your DMs or in your inbox and they'd be like, are you really calling yourself a witch? And I remember I would have to defend that term. I would have to defend it and say, there's nothing wrong with that. I'm a wise woman. I'm a woman who do, yeah, I do this and I do that. And we have to reclaim, And so I just feel like it's whatever I feel like I am when I wake up in the morning,
Love
I
it.
know magic encompasses all of it, and I just feel like, as we get older, we start to our magic just starts to grow with us, and it becomes a part of everything that we do. So waking up, taking a bath or a shower, and singing a song, a praise or an Orisha song or Yoruba song or whatever. It could be a rap song, if I'm thinking empowerment or whatever I'm thinking about that day, then that is my magic, and that and I don't let anyone say it has to look like this all the time because you're an Orisha priestess, so you need to do this all the time. You need to look like this all the time. And I'm out of that, I'm to the point where I feel like if I want to do that, if I want to sing that song, then I'll do that. If I want to sing a raunchy song and still be empowered, I will do that too, And so for me, it just evolves each day. Over a cup of coffee, I will say something. Over water, wine, whatever I'm drinking, if it's a shot of tequila, I'm just, it's just an evolution of things. And I tried to do that also with the book, make it so that you didn't feel as though you had to be committed to a specific system in order to understand or in order to engage with the work, So we're always on the move. We're always doing different things. And I don't have the time to, just pull out a certain look and then perform magic. It doesn't work that way for me. I have lots of things that I want to do and that I feel like doing, like I told a friend of mine, she was like, well, I'm wearing shorts, and I really want to go out there. That's what do it. Who cares? You're wearing your Daisy Dukes, go out there and do your magic, I mean, because we get so boxed in by, especially social media, right? They tell us what we're supposed to look like if we're magical people. They tell us what our altars should look like and this and that. And so, then we start to fall into that realm of dogma, and that's what we really want to avoid. That's why we travel these paths, right? Because we want to break away from a lot of that. And a lot of it is just patriarchal stuff, look like this, do this, and and it's just I just, for me, every day it evolves into something else. You know, I try to do something magical every day for my community, you know, for the world. And then I just, you know, I do whatever it is that I feel like I want to do. You know, I just live, you know.
Cool. And I think that is like pretty much the most magical thing you can do,
Right,
right? Just be yourself. Yeah.
You know, that's for me, that's the part about being you know, defiant is just, you know, going out there and still doing it, you know, still living, because a lot of times people just want you to shut down and hide, you know, and if you're still showing up, then you're magical.
It. Oh, that's so good. That's like a t-shirt quote.
Right.
Super good. Okay, so fine, we're getting to so what inspired you to write Conjuring the Calabash in the first place? Good to know that.
Well, you know, I think the pandemic, you know, everyone, we were all just shut down. I had already started writing lots of things and, you know, submitting here, submitting there, doing some things. And then my husband was like, look, why don't you just, you know, focus on one thing that you want to do? He's like, because you're a Sagittarius, you guys are all over the place. And so a few people I had talked to about the idea, you know, of doing it, they were like, well, you know, there are already books out there by other people. And what is it going to be that's going to be different about this? Well, you know, even before the pandemic, I had lots of clients who were practitioners of Yoruba culture, some not, but not as many as the practitioners. During the pandemic, there were lots of people who were not practitioners, who were just, you know, they go to church and now they can't go to church, you know, and they want some help. And I heard about you know, kind of thing, you know. And so, you know, the more people would talk and they would see that that it is a practice, that it is a practice that allows you to self-affirm, they felt as though it was something that they could do, you know, and it was different for a lot of people. It was a step away from, you know, sitting in a pew and having someone talk to you, and then, you know, you thinking in your mind that they're going to take care of it all. You know, I'm going to sit here for this amount of time and they'll take care of it and I can go home. Well, you know, when we started talking about, you know, how hoodoo works into your life or anything, you know, African centered and indigenous, and then they saw that, you know, I have to do some work. And for a lot of people, that was kind of daunting, like, really? You know, you're not going to do it all for me. No, you have to really engage with your situation because you know it better than me. And the more trust they gain within themselves, right? The fact that they could do it. You know, I even had some people say, well, I'm not a preacher. I'm not, you know, I'm not a this. How can I said, well, I'm not a preacher either. But you know, you can do it, you know, and they saw themselves doing it and saw themselves believing in it and using whatever songs or whatever, you know, they wanted to actually add to whatever the recipe was, they felt more empowered by it. And then they would come back and say, you know, this happened and that happened and I feel good about it. And so I would just kind of write that down. I would ask them, you know, do you mind if I, you know, write this down? I'm thinking about doing something with this. And they would be in agreement. And the more people would come back, the more we would share. It just felt like it needed to reach other people more than its group of women, you know, that were working with it. And even men, I had young men come as well, you know. And so it just really felt like people were yearning for something, and they were yearning for a movement in their lives. Fannie Lou Hamer has this quote, and I can't remember it exactly, but she talks about, you know, praying all day, getting on your knees and you're just praying. Well, you know, God's not going to drop it in your lap. You know, you have to get it, put it in motion. And so I think for a lot of them, the more that they saw that, they recognized that this is a serious practice and that they could be part of a serious practice that allowed them to be in control, more control of their own lives, then they were open to it. And so that made me really want to get the book out there so that other people could see that as well.
And you do such a wonderful job, like a lot of the spells or recipes or however you want to look at them, there's a lot of it. It's like, wow, you can find a lot of the ingredients in your kitchen. So you can like really just get started for the most part.
And that's what I wanted. You know, I didn't want people to feel like, you know, where do I find this, you know, this nuke? Yeah, where do I get this, right? You know, I didn't want those, because then, you know, it's easy for people to say, well, I can't do it. I don't know where to go. I'm not going to a Botanica. I'm not going to, you know, this shop, you know, things like that. So I really wanted it to be things that they could get and they didn't have to hide. I know a lot of practitioners, they have a specific cabinet for just their ritual stuff. Well, I wanted it to be, especially for newbies, right? New people coming to it. I didn't want it to have to be, well, I have to hide this item. I don't want anybody to see what this says on this bottle. Well, if you're using cinnamon, you can use cinnamon for anything, right? Just pull it and you, right? So I wanted those kind of things. I really, really tried to make it easy and less fearful for people so that they wouldn't have, a chance to say, well, I can't. I really wanted to take a lot of that away from it. So a lot of the spells, a lot of the recipes, a lot of it, it's like you say, you can focus on things that you already have in your cabinet at home, and start there. And you can see the magic in all of those things. And for a lot of people, they use a lot of those things, and they resonate with them in those ways, like the sweetness of cinnamon, sweetening your life, things like that. So, they can, okay, I see that. I had a lot of people say that, I'm adding that to a tea, and saying something over it. That's okay. It's like a prayer, right? And you say, yeah, it's kind of like that. If you want to use a prayer with it, you can too. And so they go, okay. And so that's, they see that, So yeah, I really wanted it because I kept going back over things, just to kind of make sure, okay, can they get this? Can they get that? Would that turn people off? I love, the weirder name things, but I know everybody does not, and they're going to, we get into this how we are today. It's like, oh, I can't do it. I can't find it. I can't do it kind of thing. We throw up our hands. And so I didn't want that.
Oh yeah, it's so great that you really thought it through and like were so, yeah, I love that you thought about the sort of newbie practitioner. Yeah, so good. So one of the main things I thought was super cool, and I don't see this a lot in a lot of magic books, honestly, is like you included a lot of sort of your life experience and very like, oh, and it's so beautiful. How you like just the stories of your family and yourself and your friends, even at school, you included. Why did you think that was important to put alongside of your spells and recipes?
Well, for me, I've read lots of books like with spells and things, and when it's just like a recipe book to me, it's good. It's good, no doubt. But for me, I just feel like when talking to newbies or even people who are still practitioners, regular practitioners, it makes it more it makes it seem more open. It makes it seem more accessible. Myself and my thoughts, and I'm not like I'm sitting in some high chair somewhere, talking to you, do this recipe like this, So it just gives you the chance to see that, we all have to constantly, work our magic. You don't just work one thing and then that's it for that, for, rest of your life. You have this abundance and now you don't have to worry. Close the book. We're constantly, clearing up things because things come back. The universe, all kind of things happen. They rehash. And so for me, I just felt like if they could see, a lot of my own life, my own transitions, things that I've experienced and how I've had to go back and to reassess and, work magic again for myself, as well as encountering other individuals, friends and family members who also were along the same path. This happened and then I did this and it got better. But then, 10 years later, this happened again. And I just felt like it allowed people to see the realness of it all. When you just open the book with just the spells and the magic and things like that, you think, oh, okay, this is it. For some people, that's what they think. Okay, this is it. And then when it's not it, they go back and they say, well, this didn't work, or that book didn't work, or I want to give that author a bad review because, I tried that spell and that spell does not work. That kind of thing. But I really feel like, we live in a world where we're constantly bombarded by things, and there's no one fix for it all. It's not going to end it all. If it was, we wouldn't need any of it, right? If we could just go to one thing and we're done,
That's right.
and it just doesn't work that way. And so I just feel like if I bring them into my world and let them see that, my life is messy too, and I fix it and then it gets messy again, down the line. And it's not because I didn't fix it right, it's just because we're living and that's what happens.
Oh, I love how you explain it because it's making me think like, yeah, when I've done sort of either spells or rituals, I have sort of the end goal in mind, right? And then I loved how you talked about earlier, like, yeah, you have like the end thing that you want the result, but you actually have to take the steps to get there. And
And
then
even then
so,
it's not done,
yeah, exactly, because you get there and then you're like, well, it wasn't, I'm here, but now it needs to be better.
I remember it was a girl. She was probably about 17, and so I had worked with her mom, and so we were doing some stuff for her, and so she was like, "Oh yeah," and you know, for the whole year everything was good, and so she was like, "Well, you know," but the next year things got, and I said, "Well, do you take one bath, and then that's it? Like once a year, once a month, once a week, you know, or one in your lifetime, you know?" And she laughed, and she was like, "What? Well, we talked like it happened, you know, things like that." And so I'm like, well, that's the same way how magic works, right? You know, it's going to help you. Then you're going to have to, you know, clean it up again. Some things are going to happen again. And some different things, you know, the next year, your senior year of school, some new challenges arise, you know? And so how do you meet those challenges, right? It may be some of the same things that we cleaned up the last year, but new people, right? And the appearance of new people. So you still have to clean those things up again. And so that's what I had hoped that people would see when they read the stories as well. You know, just that whole thing of, you know, yeah, it works, but then you still have to go back, and there are going to be times where you got to clean it up again, you know, and that doesn't mean that you're any less stronger, you know, or any less wiser, you know, or your magic doesn't work. It's just because we live in the world, and that's what happens. It's part of living.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, and I think that just the way that you've incorporated, we mentioned this on our other chat, or I mentioned it, I should say, that I thought the way you wrote like the story of your family, I'm like, oh wow, I could see like a movie or a TV show. It's just so cool. And then you have like the backdrop of New Orleans and then just the history of your family. Oh, it's so good. So I'm so happy that you put that in there and it's amazing. So thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah. So I know one thing that you pretty early in the book, which makes sense that you mentioned, is to introduce yourself to the spirits before you start working. And I thought like, that is the best advice I have ever heard because I don't recall that ever being in any of the books that I've read. So, why do you feel that it's important in hoodoo, but then in any of, you know, any practice?
Well, because I think a lot of times that I have met other practitioners of anything, you know, talk to other people, it's always been this whole thing like, well, you know, we're in charge, right? We're in charge, so we get to have the say, you know. And I'm thinking, you're asking for this higher power, this help. You know, I can remember being a newbie and thinking, that sounds pretty right, you know, to me. But I just think that, you know, they have such an unseen power, this unseen force, right? And it's important that we come to them, you know, with compassion, and that they know who we are. And I tell people that even when they're working with their ancestors for the first time, or the 70th time, you know, you still want to come to them, you know, like as if you were coming to your grandmother, a child, you're coming to an elder, you know, you want to let them know that you're here and for what purpose it is, and give them the chance to say, okay, yay, I'm going to work with this, you know, situation that you presented, or I'm going to pass it to the next ancestor. And I think spirit is pretty much that same, in that same, for me, has always worked in that same vein. You know, in the Orisha culture, you know, we appease Eshu, and then you decide where else it needs to go. When we have tornadoes where I live, we always talk to Eshu first to ensure that our message to Oya, who handles that, she hears it, right? He is the one who carries that information. If you go to the Orisha before him, any other Orisha before him, it's not going, it's like, you know, Charlie Brown teacher talk, you know, because he has to allow it to be. And so I think for me, you know, introducing ourselves to spirit, introducing ourselves to the energy, you know, it allows the energy to see that we come in peace and that we don't hold ourselves as greater than the power that we are asking for, you know. Because I think a lot of people, you know, I've met people who are like, well, you just tell them what to do and they're going to do it. And I'm like, nah, I don't think that works pretty well. And, you know, that's not my idea of how it works, you know, because I've seen things backfire for people, you know. And then when you ask them, well, how did that situation play out? Like, what happened? And then they go into, well, I just got up and I lit these candles and I told them. And I'm like, that part right there. You know, it's that part. Which part? The I told them, you know, the finger pointing part, you know. And so, you know, for me, I think that, you know, you allow them the chance, like I say, to say, I'm the one to help with this situation, or we'll find someone else who will, another energy or whatever, and in option C as well, how your magic is working, how your connection is working. Do I need to work more on the ancestral side before I put in other energies? I always teach people that the ancestors are your first line of defense. And so you want to develop a great rapport with your ancestors. And then they will protect you in terms of when you need to work outside of their realm, with other energies and things like that. But if you don't have that rapport, then that won't work for you. You're kind of like you're going into a gunfight with a knife. You know what I'm saying? You might not make it. You might get a few, but in the end,
Yeah, you might like lose a
that kind of thing.
hand.
Right, right. And so and that's a big debate. There are lots of people who feel like they should go straight to spirit and I don't have to deal with ancestors, And I mean I'm here not to tell anybody what to do, but for me it's always been my ancestors have always been very protective, and so I will go to ancestors first and then we will go to whatever deities we need to go to. When my oldest daughter was applying for medical school in Havana, we had to go to New York twice. And so we were like, oh my God, we gotta go to New York round. My husband was excited because he wanted to go to New York, right? And so one of the first things we did was we went to I divined. And so we went to the ancestors. And so my husband's grandfather and my grandfather both were going, and my husband's mom, she had passed when my husband was 13. And so they were all going. Well, she at the his my husband's mother, she very early in her life, she had finished high school, but she had wanted to go to college, but that never happened for her. And she was really smart and kind of like the whole family, they rallied around her. She was going to be the one for them, right? So she really wanted to go when my daughter had to do the interview process. She wanted to be there with her for that portion of it. And so she got through that. And so if you got through the first part of it, then you had to go a second time. And his grandfather wanted to go that time. He had been to New York. Because he had been served in the war, and New York was his last stopping point, and so he wanted to go back to New York. And so when we went out that night, before she had to do her last little loop before they said yay or nay, he wanted a glass of whiskey, and we left a glass of whiskey on the table. And so she got in, and so after that, we were told to appease. She had to appease her Xangô. So we went through the ancestors and then she went through her Orisha head, which is Xangô. We didn't go to Xangô first. We needed that protection of ancestors. And then we could move into spirit. And so I always try to encourage people to introduce yourselves, to your aunt, because a lot of them, my daughter has never met her grandmother, my husband's mother, but she wanted to be there, And so that was a beautiful moment, but it was also showcasing the fact that you have to introduce yourself to spirit. You have to start in your lineage and then you move on. And so I find that when you do that, then you humble yourself. And as you are able to humble yourself, then you're able to open yourself up for whatever the beauty of the magic is that they will give you.
Wow, that's wonderful. That's such a beautiful story about your daughter and that's so great. I do have a question because now I know you talk about working with ancestors and that's part of sort of my path, but I'm sure I'm not unique in this situation, but my kind of immediate ancestors are kind of a bit troubled, right? So how would you, I know you do address this in your book for sure, but as far as like, so the broader audience might understand, like how do you work through that if you like, you know what I'm saying?
And it, because I always tell people they're just like us, right? We have some people that we don't want to invite over for the holiday, even though they're our family, right? We know we're not inviting them. And so I look at it that way, because when you think about it, the parallel between life and death is we're pretty much the same. We just can't see them, And so I don't put the troubled people on my altar space, I do say words for them over. I may light a candle and have a little bluing water, and I may say words for those individuals because I do want them to heighten themselves and to learn. But it's not for me to say how long it'll take for them to learn to be a better person. You know, I can't say, oh, well, she's better now. I believe it. Let me put her up there. And then, you know, she starts telling me to do silly things, you know,
Right.
to repeat. Yeah, right.
Yeah.
You know, and so I always tell people, just you have to just make peace with that. And the part of the work that you do for them is, you know, try to move them into a space where they can be surrounded by those other ancestors who are good, you know, and who can help show them the way. But that's what you do for them, not think that you're going to clean them up and put them up there, rehab them, you know, ancestral rehab, and then put them on the altar. It doesn't work that way. You know, we just have to make our peace and leave them over there, you know, kind of
Yeah.
thing. And you know, that's what I do. You know, we all have to do it at certain points, you know. And it can be difficult, especially if it's a close relative, you know, and later on they just brought all this. But you know, that's the one of the best things we do. We send them to be with other ancestors who can help them, you know, repair their own mistakes within themselves, you know, and that's what we do for them.
Oh, that's so great. I love that. Yeah, because I do think, I feel like sometimes there's a little bit of, I've kind of heard different stories, and I'm sure you have too, like, oh, they have this other like perspective now, and they, you know, they get better, you know, and it's like, that hasn't been my experience, even in speaking.
No, hasn't been mine either.
Okay.
Right? Yeah,
Like,
that's what I always tell people. Oh, so they went to ancestral rehab. Now they're good, you know.
Right. Wow, cool. Yeah.
Okay, right. Okay. You
Oh, so
know, yeah.
yeah.
You know, and I've encountered people who've said, yeah, and I just put them up there. And then they'll start saying, well, this happened and that happened. And, you know, and my husband, he was taking only one drink and now he's drinking the whole bottle,
Oh.
just like this person, right? And I'm like, you take them off the altar. They should not be there. You know what I'm saying? Because they're going to
Yeah.
relive their life, you know? And this particular person in that instance did remove them and things started to clear up in their life, you know? And, you know, you just, you know, and it's one of those things where we want to fix people and we want to believe that if we can communicate with our ancestors and we can make them better. But no, we that's not our job. That's not our job
Yeah.
to do that, you know? You know, just like in life, people have to decide if they want to be better. You know, if they
Yeah.
don't want to be better, no matter how much we love on them, we can't force them to do it.
Yeah. Oh gosh. Oh man, I wish, yeah, I shout that out. You know, I always have to rehear that message too, because it's a sad thing you learn as you get older, but you know,
No,
ultimately
it
what
is
can you
very
do?
true. I, you know, and like we were talking about, you know, redoing things. I have to
Yeah.
constantly tell myself that too. I get in the mirror and I say it. I kid you
Yeah.
not. You know, I say that because you want to, right? You so
Yeah.
want to do that for people and for yourself. You're thinking like, you know, kind of sometimes you think, you know, I messed up or, you know, maybe, you know, it can be better this time.
Yeah.
And, you know, you set yourself up.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. Yeah, that was great for walking through that. I appreciate that so much. So what would you say is a misconception that the general population has about hoodoo that you would like to dispel?
Ooh, I like that one. People always say that hoodoo is voodoo. They always loop it together. Hoodoo, voodoo. Oh, do you do that hoodoo, voodoo stuff? You know, and what I always say is that voodoo or vodun, as some people call it, is a religion. You know, it's a religious practice. It's a and hoodoo is not. Anybody can practice hoodoo. Vodun or voodoo is an initiatory practice, right? You have to go through initiations for that. Now, you know, what I always say is that, you know, they overlap, right? There are a lot of people who are initiated to vodun, and they are hoodoo practitioners. And so sometimes if they're doing a voodoo working, they may bring over some of the voodoo stuff into it, you know. This morning I had to do a working for my husband. He was having some trouble with someone at work. And he was like, And so, you know, part of it, because my husband is an Ogun priest, when I did the work, I sung an Ogun song over the work. So there is overlapping. So, you know, I always tell people they're not the same because anybody can practice hoodoo. Anybody can. You know, Catholic people, there are people who go to Catholic church and they go home and they get their hoodoo on. I always say, you know, Baptist church and go home and get their hoodoo. So, you know, hoodoo is one of those things. It's a liberatory magic. It's about revolution. It comes from that whole vein of, you know, no way out of it, making a way out of no way. You know, how do we do this when we don't know what our spiritual practice is? But we do know how to talk to these herbs. We do know how to conjure, you know, and that, and it's folk magic, you know. And so with folk magic, it can be used under the basis of anything else. And so, but they're not the same. And people will always loop it together in a sentence or a statement. You're a hoodoo voodoo person. And I go, you know, I love voodoo. But hoodoo is not voodoo. You know, they're
Right.
totally different. Yeah.
I think it's just, because it rhymes so well,
I think so too, right? I was about to say that rhyme scheme, right? They can't help but put it to, no, it's funny because, you know, when you say, when people say, well, are you Baptist? Or, you know, do you know, are you, so are you Catholic? No. Are you Muslim? Are you original? Okay, you're not Muslim. And then it's like, well, you hoodoo voodoo, you know, that kind of thing. And it's like, I just have to laugh, you know. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thank you for walking us through that. Hopefully we're more educated about that, so I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. So what are some upcoming projects or events that you want us to know about? You're a busy lady, so I'm very curious.
Hey, Gamacon, and I said it right. Look at me. You know, when I first saw the name, I said Pagan-a-con, Pagan-a-con. So
Begun.
I will be there
Cool.
in Minnesota. Yeah, my husband's like, what do we wear? Because he's coming with me. I'm like, I don't know. I guess, oh, this is Minnesota. I don't know.
Yeah.
Not sundresses, I know.
No.
So yeah, so I'm going to be there. I am happy about that because I get to talk about using tarot for poetry. So
Ooh,
poeting
oh
tarot is what I call it. So I love that. And that's one of the things that, because I list tarot books in my book, right? Some of my favorite decks. And so when I do readings for clients, I encourage them to write. You know, take a card. I will take a picture of the cards. And so I want them to keep a journal and to kind of write out what they see in terms of their situation and how that would play out in the imagery that they see. And so usually we write poetry. It could be a journal, it could be like a letter or whatever. I call it poeting tarot because I like the poetry part of it. But, you know, whatever they see when they look at it. And for a lot of clients, that has helped them to really come to ownership, you know, of how to get through the situation. So that's one of the things I'm talking about. I really love that. I'm happy about that. I'll be talking about healing altars, creating altar spaces with deities that we don't usually think about, but are in African American culture. And so setting that up in terms of music to play, things like that, but also a little background on, you know, how we can use these altars in our own lives, you know, to help with things like if, you know, you have a boss who, you know, just constantly on your back and things like that, you know, how you can set up this space and, you know, work it so that you can have some healing from that situation and things like that. So I like that one because I try to give about 10 different altar spaces to work with, and magical workings, a bath and things like that. A quick work you can take with you. And so I'm happy about that one as well. And then just in general talking about hoodoo in New Orleans and how I grew up is one of the last speeches I'll be doing there with that. I'm excited about it. This is my first time, so I'm a little bit nervous, a little bit excited. I did my Lenormand, and my Lenormand was like, "That's gonna be wild and crazy." So I was like, "Okay, I can take it. Wild and crazy is good."
Wild and crazy sounds fun, Just gets lots of rest,
Yeah, because they're like, oh, you can eat, you can have this, you can have your favorite drink. I'm like, okay, we might have to wait on the favorite drink. I'll be too wild and crazy.
exactly. Wow,
But
so many cool things.
excited because I think that the more people get exposed to the book, I think that it will allow them to step away from a lot of stereotypes about magic from an African American perspective, which is one of the things that I really wanted as well for the book. I think oftentimes, you know, we look at Hollywood and things like that, and we think that magic from the African American perspective is not really high magic. You know, it's some goofy thing that people do, you know, or, you know, it's just crazy, right? And so I really wanted them to look at this book and to see that that the practices, you know, they do have validity, and they have a purpose, and they mean something to the people who do it. You know, it's serious magic. So, yeah.
Yeah, I love that you mentioned that because I I like reading all the magic books, all different types. For whatever reason, I tend to gravitate towards like things like the Kabbalah and maybe more Western. That's just my path. But yeah, there is a lot of kind of sniffiness around sort of more the either like material world magic or more earthy kind of magic,
Right,
which
right,
I
right.
don't understand personally.
Yeah, 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 yeah. And I love those too. I mean, I read lots of Crowley. Lots. I have my deck.
That's a lot. Woo,
No,
bless you.
right. It is a lot. It is a lot, right? I will, if the thing comes up, I'll have to watch this. And I do understand this, the kind of stuffiness that comes with it. When I read it, I get real stuffy too.
Right, exactly.
I was like, what are you doing? I'm reading.
Ooh,
I'm doing
yes.
this magical thing. So yeah, I get it, but and even with that though, I it's not like when I go to, a Santeria or Apollo Mayombe, I go, sort of like now it's time to just down it, I still have that same interest, that same love and appreciation for it. And that's what I really want people to see. That you can practice this, and it is serious. It really is, and it's empowering, and because a lot of times, even within my own community, there's a lot of shunning from it, right? There's a lot of running from it, like we talked about earlier. That's I'm not doing that. And then when you find people who do want to step into the magical realm, the spiritual realm, then it becomes, well, I can do this Wicca, but I'm not doing anything like that. I don't want to identify with that, because, and I think a lot of it has been because it's had bad press, So, the idea of doing that and thinking that that doesn't work as opposed to this must work because this is way over here, And so just to kind of dispel a lot of those myths about it and to find ways that we can work it into our lives, and be appreciative of it. Just like we were talking about, we can do it all. We can have it all. We can appreciate it all, and that's good because one day it may call for this, and the next day it may call for that, and that's okay,
Great. Wonderful. I love that perspective. I share it. Want us to shout it around. I
you
love it.
go.
Oh man. Wow. I love that you have so many things coming up, and they all sound really wonderful. So where can folks find out more about you, learn more about all the wonderful things that you're up to?
The best place is to go to where they can find me on Instagram and things like that. Instagram, I love Instagram. I didn't think I would, but I do. I was asking my daughter, what? I gotta do what?
Yeah, I
And she's like,
know.
all you have to do is this, all you have to do is that. I was like, okay, I will. And now I can't stop,
Right.
And so definitely if they go to my web page, if they go to my if they go to my web mawiakaieljamaa.com, they can be linked up to everything. And so they can see when I post something silly on Twitter or whatever, is going on. And they could just follow me on in those resources. And I'm always posting something, whether, not probably not the same time at every site, but
Right.
once, at least once, yeah, once a week, once or twice a week.
Okay, cool. Yeah, everybody definitely follow Malia and all her cool stuff that she's doing, because you're apparently you do like a million things all at the same time and very well. So kind of the last thing we kind of do is, what are some words of wisdom, in addition to the words of wisdom you shared, that you would like to leave us with today?
I think just be open to learning new things, to reading something that you haven't read in the magical realm. Maybe it's something that you wouldn't read, but maybe you'd like to take a chance. And you don't have to practice it, but just open yourself up to some new knowledge. Oftentimes we turn ourselves off and we think, oh, that's not for me. I'm not going to read that. But we can learn a lot about people and learn a lot about, their perspectives on life. So when we do run into situations, we can be more of an ally for that practice. And so I would hope that people would want to do that, knowing that you don't have to practice everything, but you can be an ally to the person who does practice it and fight for their right to continue to practice as they so see fit.
Yeah, I love it. Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. Well, thank you so much, Maria. You're
Thank
such
you
a
for having
pleasure.
me. Thank you.
Yes, thank you.
It was a delight having the talented and wonderful Maria Vomani on the show today. Absolutely read her book, Conjuring the Calabash, and do check out the show notes to find out more about Maria and all the amazing ways she contributes to our magical world. Do remember to like, follow, and subscribe on YouTube or your favorite podcast platform. It really helps us grow. Thank you for listening and being an important part of the Casual Temple.